Good morning. So good to see you after the snow. We had a great snow yesterday afternoon. And I considered how this time of year is such a good time of year for us to study the Genjo Koan. Because as I was observing some of the snow falling on the bark of a tree, and the little pieces of the bark would catch it, and so the tree would seem to have like little speckles of snow on it, and how the snow kind of hides things for a moment. Just as I spoke last week about the title of Genjo Koan, that which is hidden and yet shows up. So we could say it's like the truth in our life, that it's both covered over like the snow and completely apparent to us when we're awake. We can ask ourselves throughout this study period, what is it that is hidden in our life that wants to show up? Within our ordinary life, I'm talking about, not some idea about our life, but our actual day-to-day existence. It's really important as we study the Genjo Koan to take it into our own personal experience. How does it resonate with your everyday life? Because if it's just an abstraction, it's really not very interesting. I mean, it's beautiful poetry, but it doesn't make any sense. What you have to do is take it into your life. So I want you to remember now, I've said a few times that Dogen, as a young man, was searching for resolution to the great question, if we are originally perfect and complete, if we are originally Buddha nature, then why practice? I mean, it's an important question. Why practice? Why get up a little early in the morning to sit zazen? Why come here on a Sunday morning? Why study the Genjo Koan? If what the Genjo Koan is saying is that just as we are, we're perfect and complete. So it's a great question that that Dogen chose to pursue. And I would like you to that question alive as we study this chapter of the Shōgō Genzō. Let it play a little bit in your heart, in your mind. Why practice? Because it will open for you like a flower if you pay attention to it. Today we're talking about the second section of the Genjo Koan, where Dogen begins to explore and stretch our ideas of what is delusion and what is enlightenment. In the translation that we're using by Kaz Tanahashi Sensei, he's using the terms awakening, realization, and enlightenment. So when you see those three terms, you realize that he's just kind of playing with them. And very, very often, there's slightly different terms also in the Japanese that Dogen was using. But they all imply the same thing, a shifting of our perspective, an insight about how we are in the world, a realization, an awakening, an enlightenment about how we are in the world, in our ordinary lives, how we experience reality, how we are with others. So the section two that we're going to study today is so beautiful, I'm going to read it. To carry the self forward and illuminate the myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. Further, there are those who continue realizing beyond realization and those who are in delusion throughout delusion. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas and go on actualizing Buddha. It's a beautiful section. It has a delightful structure, you may have noticed. It's a very plain structure and deceptively clear. So at the beginning, you have this kind of parallelism. You've got to carry the self forward. And then the next line is that the myriad things come forth. So we have this movement of something to something. And then we have the playfulness of the realization of delusion and the delusion about realization and realizing beyond realization and delusion through delusion. Fully actualized Buddhas actualizing Buddha. So you can see, you get a sense of the playfulness that Dogen is doing. He's taking these well-known, well-wrought phrases and turning them around and turning them around. It's as if, you know, you had a lovely hard candy in your mouth and you were like rolling it around and this way and see it that way. I would love you to not be quite so digital about awakening and enlightenment and see it in a more analog way. And this is what Dogen is offering us. It's poetry, really. It's song. So many people want to turn it into a philosophical treatise, and then they have a lot of problems because there's things like contradictions arise. Yes! As Whitman said, very well, I contradict myself. Huh? So it's about relationship of our practice, our life, and our realization. So the first line says, to carry the self forward and illuminate the myriad things is delusion. What do you think that means? It's really, on the first level, it's about the gap that we create. I'm separate from realization. I have to get realization over there. But I have to go and reach out to the things, the myriad things, the things in the world that are separate from me in order for me to find realization, to seek realization through these myriad things. To carry the self forward and illuminate myriad things is delusion, he says. That word carry it really is sort of like drags. It's a word, carry something heavy. So it's like dragging the self forward, searching for what we already are. Searching for what we already are. It's the reverse of intimacy. It is not intimate, separate. Insight, wisdom, compassion. Already within you. Just to be able to realize it. But we think it's something we have to attain. And there's a koan, is one of my favorite koans, is about Daito Shiso Buddha. So, who is said to have sat in zazen for 10 kalpas, which is a really, really long time. And a student asked his teacher, Daito Chiso Buddha did zazen for 10 kalpas and did not attain Buddhahood. Why was that? The teacher, Master Seijo, said, "Your question is splendid indeed." Is that weird? Your question is very splendid. What do you think he meant by that? Your question is splendid indeed. So the monk persists and he says, but why? He sat all that time, tens of millions of centuries, and he did not attain Buddhahood. Why? The master finally replies, because he didn't attain it. The teaching in that koan is what? He said the question was splendid. He's saying, your question itself says it all. The answer is tucked right into your question. Why did he not attain it? So, of course, we cannot attain what we already have. So the trick is to realize what we already have, so that we're not creating a gap between ourselves and the myriad dharmas, trying to get it, trying to attain it, when it's so intimate, it's always so close to us. Always, like our breath, right here. We tend to think that we are insufficient. We tend to think that we lack something and we want to add something. And that's exactly what this first line is talking about. That concept of deficiency or insufficiency prevents us from taking care of ourselves. It prevents us from taking care of others. We feel like we don't have enough, and so we have to run to the myriad things to get them, and we abandon our very instrument of life. We abandon ourselves. We scatter ourselves. We get a new program, we follow a guru, we read a new book. Is this not delusion? Do we not know it's delusion? To push ourselves, to force ourselves to realize something. Or perhaps to obtain some kind of recognition, some kind of title that proves that we're realized, that we are special. This too is delusion. And all of it derives from that fundamental delusion that we and the myriad things are separate. That one has to carry oneself forward. That it's not enough to be aware, awake, and in a place of effortless awareness, but we somehow have to push. There's this beautiful poem I came across yesterday by a Song Dynasty nun. We don't know her name, which is often true of the women teachers in the past. But here's the poem she wrote. Searching for spring all day, I never saw it. Straw sandals treading everywhere, among the clouds along the bank. Coming home, I laughed, catching the plum blossom scent. Spring at each branch tip, already perfect. Only when she was no longer looking for the spring did it come to her. Spring at each branch tip, already perfect. I know I've told some of you this story before, but when years ago I used to hunt mushrooms in Northern California when I lived on a commune. Another story, another time. I used to hunt mushrooms, and they'd be big Italian Boletus mushrooms, absolutely beautiful. But the first time I went out for them, I had all read all the mycology book, I had all the books on mushrooms, I had all the descriptions and everything, you know, and I had my big boots on and went out in the rain, and I did not find one mushroom. I looked and I looked and I looked. Like she's looking for the spring, I was looking for the mushrooms, looking everywhere. And then this Italian guy came down the hill. He had this bag, this burlap bag, completely full of these mushrooms. And I said, but where are they? Where? Tell me where they are. And he just like points. Right where I am. And you know, they're brown things amongst all the leaves. And it was like, I mean, it was truly an awakening experience. It was like, oh my gosh, they're everywhere. And then everywhere I looked, they were just everywhere, but I couldn't see them, right? So this woman reminds me of that. Coming home, I laughed, catching the plum blossom scent. Spring at each branch tip, already perfect. So the next line, which contrasts with the previous line, is, that the myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening. That the world itself illuminates us is awakening. When that happens, we're free of striving. We're not looking for the mushrooms or looking for the spring. We're not reaching away from ourselves. As the old Chinese says, we're not doing. We are. But we are thoroughly intimate with what is showing up. What is hidden and shows up in each instant. The way the snow snags on a branch. The white blossoms of a coleus in the middle of winter. The hard, cold wind on her nose. To see in this very siren that we hear right now, that everything is perfect and complete. In this instant, in this space, in the situation where our life is now, that all of it is Dharma. Allowing, letting the myriad things come forth, letting our life unfold. It's not a passive thing. It is utterly dynamic, utterly responsive. It is free of compulsion, free of forcing. The great Zen master said, don't let the word Tao delude you. Realize it's nothing else than what you do morning and night. That could be this whole couplet that we're studying. to be able to see our place in the world. You know, it's, we can find some dramatic ways to do it, but I like to talk about how, you know, when we're at an intersection in New York, many of us, most of us, will see that light turning yellow and think, well, I can make it. And we run across the street, right? We know we can make it. And we know also that the cars that are trying to turn and are trying to get there can't go until we're... And the fact that we go, like several other people say, oh, she's going, I'll go too. And there's this whole kind of like crowd of us that enter the intersection and continue walking across and not allow the cars to come. And we think we feel good. That's what we do. That's what New Yorkers do. I grew up in California where you don't do that. So that's why I'm very aware of it. And I love it. I enjoy that aspect of living here. And yet I also am aware that by stopping those cars, I stop the car behind that car. And then actually that whole set that is trying to get through the intersection can't because of my ego, my desire to move forward. And so not only am I stopping up that, but if you can think about it, if you could just kind of like move high above the city, you could see how this one act can affect traffic all the way up to the west side. The single act of getting across Broadway to get to the Zendo on time. It's important for us to see how we affect others. How? You know, I was snorkeling in the Caribbean and the plastic bags are just, they're all over the coral reefs. And, you know, there's this beautiful water and these beautiful rocks and fish, and they're all swimming in and out of this hideous mountain of plastic bags. And so when we go to the grocery store and we decide, oh, I have to have a plastic bag, you know, I have to have a bag for my apples and I have to have my bag for these things, you know, we're like destroying whole aspects of the earth. And it totally, you know, because I got to have a plastic bag for my apples. To really, to be able to see that. When I was in Tibet, you know, there are these gullies that are completely filled with plastic bottles. Huge, like canyons filled with plastic bottles. We hide them here in the West, so we don't see them. There they don't have that luxury, and so it's so shocking to see. One's relationship to the earth. We don't see that. We miss that. That the myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening is also about our meditation practice. Our simple zazen on the cushion. We sit here and we hear the bells from St. Pat's across the street. We hear the sirens from engine company number 33 on Great Jones Street. And if you come in the mornings, if you're one of our morning sitters, you have the great pleasure of hearing garbage trucks on Crosby Alley every morning. When we're deeply sitting, these sounds come to us. They enter and they fall away. We don't hold them, we don't interrogate them, we don't pursue them. We don't turn them into a friend or an enemy. They're just the sounds of where we sit. And yet, we are experiencing a profound intimacy with the moment. Grabbing them or rejecting them separates us. To simply be present in the instant, to share the instant with them, is intimacy. And here is where we begin to understand that realization and delusion are fundamentally not two things. We practice in the belly of delusion. We awaken in delusion. And this profoundly affects how we are with others in the world, how we negotiate, how we express ourselves, how we care for ourselves. Here's how he says it. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. So we have to be deluded in order to see that we are deluded. Huh? What is it to have great realization of our delusion? I've experienced it a million times. Sitting there in a fog of my ego, seeing the whole world is, you know, there's, it's out there, and there's this ego here that's in charge of everything. And then suddenly, to be free. Suddenly to see that it's a delusion. Or to react. You know how we react to some old wound that drives us, and every time somebody says X, we turn to Y, you know. And to see that in action as it arises is such a liberation for the ego. Perhaps we're sitting zazen with all our might, really forcing our breath in and out, telling ourselves to breathe in, and now breathe out. Breathe in, and now breathe out. And maybe all of a sudden we realize we don't have to tell ourselves to do that. That actually, body knows very well how to breathe in and breathe out. We become liberated from that delusion of control, of effort. For a moment, we become free of the idea that we are controlling others, that they are our objects, that we can manipulate for pleasure, for gain. And maybe we shift our perspective. The way now people are beginning to shift their perspective about the earth itself. And native peoples, particularly in South America, are being empowered to take care of the resources of the earth in a new way that hasn't been seen for centuries, 5-6 centuries. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. This is the other side of that. One side is is having realization of our delusion. The other side is being deluded about our realization. Again, it's about having an idea about what enlightenment is like, having read some beautiful story about someone else's experience. We want to get that. And we think we fail if we don't get that. Exactly that particular experience, Mr. K on the train. If you haven't read The Three Pillars of Zen, you don't know what I'm talking about, but there are books and there are lots of people's descriptions of their enlightenment experiences, and we can be very deluded about realization. Or we can say, that person over there, that is a realized being, but not me. Or, of course, there's the reverse, I. Look at all these people in this room and only I. Greatly deluded about realization. Further, there are those who continue realizing beyond realization and those who are in delusion throughout delusion. To continue realizing beyond realization really gives us a hint that realization is not a place we go to, but it is a moment in time. A moment of awareness, usually followed by a moment of delusion. And yet we're changed within our realization. And so, as Dogen says, we continue realizing beyond realization. We continue to see our lives as they unfold. And as we recall from the first segment, flowers fall, weeds spring up. But this time it's within our realization and not within our delusion. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddha. This is one of my favorite lines in the whole Genjo Koan. Many of you know I've said this to you in Dokusan many times. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. When you're truly awakened, when we are realizing, we're just alive and fresh and in our life. And we're not, you know, with a mirror, oh, it's an actualized Buddha here. Because we're taking care of ourselves and others. It's dynamic, resonant with life itself. It's not an objectified self. You don't have to be conscious of it. Still, you're more clear. Practicing the Buddha way, you become more clear. You become more free. When you're truly free, there's no being enlightened. There's just those flowers falling, the snow on a branch. This hungry squirrel that came up to me yesterday, and just, I mean, I couldn't believe it. It's like almost on my boot. Give me something. Tears and laughter. We are changed. Our activity is changed, and our activity is really ourself, how we are in the world. And we begin to realize that and function appropriately, expressing ourselves, interconnected, the myriad things pour themselves into our activity. It's very natural. A lot of times we call it compassion.